I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Nerdy Show. A once great and powerful podcasting force lies dormant, slumbering in the forgotten chasms of the internet. But legends say that should any dare call upon its power, it would awaken and once again shine its insights and irreverence upon every facet of nerddom. Some said that day would never come, but if you can hear my voice, then the time is now. I have only to speak the words. From comics and video games to science and technology, if it's geeky, we've got it covered. Welcome to Nerdy Show. Hi, I'm Kat. It's been a while, folks. Lots to catch up on. Now, Nerdy Show is not coming back as a weekly show, but the gang and I are still out in the world having adventures, and every once in a while we've got something to share. So, for those of you that can hear my voice, stay subscribed. Good things are coming your way. First up, I'll just say this. Yes, I know nerdyshow.com is down. It turns out that when you operate a WordPress site for over a decade, it just kind of breaks. Especially if you're as illiterate in the technical side of web design as I am. If any of you out there are WordPress developers, please do drop me a line, kat@omniverse.media. One way or another, we'll get it back up as soon as we can. But the matter at hand for this podcast is that I have something to share with you. For the past year, I've been working on a show that's likely very relevant to your interests. A show called Mother, She Wrote, an Earthbound podcast. Yes, a whole podcast about Nintendo's Earthbound series. It turns out no one had done one before, and they've certainly never done one like this. Whether you're familiar with the series or not, if you like Nerdy Show, I think I can guarantee this is going to be your jam. Here's a little taste to give you the setup. I had this dream. And in the dream, my friend Doug said to me,
"Look, I know those Earthbound games are really cool and important pieces of media. I'd love to play them, but I don't think I'm ever going to get around to it. You talk about the games all the time. Maybe you could just do a podcast about them?"
And so my dream self thought, what if I did an episodic podcast that took listeners through the journey of each game in the Mother series, like a diary, but with contextual, cultural, and emotional analysis.
Oh, you work even in your sleep.
So anyone could experience these stories.
But I don't think it's good to work too hard.
And I need a co-host. So I wake up and I call my girlfriend and I tell her about the dream. It's like a diary about the Mother series.
And you could call it Mother, She Wrote.
Hey, okay, so that was the opening of episode zero. Let me explain a bit. Mother, She Wrote is a combination of the two halves of my career. The media journalism I did on Nerdy Show, especially with things like the Nerdy Show Prime episodes, and my career producing audio dramas from Dungeons and Doritos all the way to my current work on the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program. Each episode of Mother, She Wrote opens with a full-cast cinematic audio drama, allowing listeners to connect with the adventure firsthand. Like, emotionally, as though you were playing the game. And then, my co-host Jessica Mudd and I pop in to dissect that section of the game. All the weird details, expanded media, Easter eggs, etc. I'll share more of the show with you in a moment. I am really excited for you to hear it. It feels good to be back doing some kind of nerd media thing without, you know, my work just amounting to me being an unpaid advertising intern for a mega corporation. But if that little tidbit already made you say, yeah, I'm down to clown, well, hunt down Mother She Wrote on the podcast player you're listening to this on, or head to mothershewrote.earth. I've been meaning to share Mother She Wrote on the Nerdy Show feed for a while, but life has been bonkers, and I'll elaborate on that a little. But, well, so why now? Well, on Monday, there's another Nerdy Show episode coming out. Remember Pixel Hate? You know, the legendary chiptunes composer who played alongside Imogen Heap and the Gorillaz. We interviewed him several times back on Nerdy Show. You know, the guy who made a concept record using the antique computational machines at Bletchley Park, the ones that Alan Turing worked on? Well, he stepped away from music 12 years ago, and now he's back. We interviewed him on Mother She Wrote, mostly pertaining to Earthbound, but the conversation was so big that we've split it in twain. So, here on this feed, exclusive to Nerdy Show, we're dropping an entirely different cut of that interview episode, featuring a track-by-track exploration of his first new record in over a decade, Hard Reset. That's what's to come. Let's talk about where we've been. A quick catch-up, because there has been a lot of water under the bridge. And maybe, for some reason, you're just a random person listening to this, and well, Nerdy Show's been going on since 2009, so what are you gonna do? Let's do a quick overview. In the distant past, on a planet called 2009, in a former life, I co-founded Nerdy Show with Triforce Mike Pandel, John Hex Carter, Brian Clevenger, and a fella named Aaron Holland. We were a rough and tumble podcast about all things nerdy, back when, believe it or not, a podcast with a bunch of friends talking about nerdy stuff was a novel concept. Over the years, we expanded into a whole network of shows. Nerdy Show's core cast grew and changed. And then in 2009, after a decade of whirlwind adventures and so many title shifts in nerd culture, our core team quietly pivoted away from journalism and launched Omniverse, a storytelling company with a specialty in audio drama. Though Nerdy Show, the show, has been dormant, the community we built alongside our fans is still alive and thriving. What was once our website forums has become our Discord server, which you can find at omniverse.media/discord. If you're a Nerdy Show old-timer, you'll be in good company. It's filled with folks from long ago, and plenty of new friends. These days, I'm best known as a writer and a showrunner for the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, but I'm also a voice actor. You can hear me on shows like the sci-fi audio dramas Midnight Burger and Moonbase Theta Out. I'm also an illustrator and designer, as seen with my art for the past six or so Mark with a C albums. Nerdy Show was founded in Orlando, Florida, and a lot of our team is still there. Unfortunately, though, I'm not. Florida gets a bad rap. I hear people talk about cutting it off in the United States all the time. Well, that's a whole other conversation I'm not going to get into, but Florida's wonderful. I love Florida. I'm a fifth-generation Floridian. That weird tropical wonderland is my heart and soul. And I love Orlando and the incredible, really, truly incredible nerdy communities that are still there. I miss my home and my friends and family a lot. But I was forced to leave. I'm transgender, and the state government, which is not representative of Florida, took away my access to health care and made it an arrestable offense for people like me to use public restrooms. They claim all these laws are just common sense, but really, no, they're doing what they can to make it fundamentally impossible to be transgender in Florida. So I'm lucky enough that I had an opportunity to leave and the resources to do so. So I did, because I was running out of medication. And if I don't have it, well, let's say a lot of things far worse than hair in funny places will happen to me. It'll be pretty damn painful. And I mention all this because not a lot of people are talking about it. I mean, it's shocking to me how, when I end up telling my story, how many people, like everybody, are surprised by it. I'm a political refugee within the United States. That's how bad it is. I lost the life I knew because a fascist regime has taken control of my state. Florida was previously, at least in the parts of it I lived, a queer utopia with many clinics dedicated specifically to transgender healthcare. But Florida has been subject to a targeted institutional attack. It's stripping rights from every minority group, forcing out doctors and educators, and destroying the environment. I mean, it's horrific how cartoonishly evil it is. It's like a Captain Planet episode. So that's the big update for me. A unique bit of trauma that ambiently haunts me every day. Yay. So fun. I used to like not talk about my personal life on Nerdy Show, like as a rule. But you know, no one should have to live like this. So I gotta hear it from me now. Haha. And if you don't want to hear this, like if you don't like this, if you disagree with my existence, I mean, this isn't ideological. It's about kindness. And if you're Christian, I think it's important to evaluate just what that means, because that's kind of Jesus's whole deal. But there is a silver lining to this. I'm now married to Jess, Jessica Mudd, my co-host on Mother, She Wrote, who you've heard a little bit of on that piece that we played from the show. And now, as a result of that, I'm a mom to two kids. So, you know, life's a freaking roller coaster, folks. We live in Louisville, Kentucky, and except for the absolutely crazy allergens in this place I didn't even know existed, it's actually a lovely, wonderful place. I just went to a joint called Planet of the Tapes. It's like a bar, an arcade, and venue for just tape heads, people who love like retro VHS tapes. It's freaking rad, and it's got the Twilight Zone pinball machine and the Johnny Mnemonic pinball machine and delicious drinks. So, what, you know, that's awesome. Orlando's got a lot of cool stuff, but it doesn't have that. Anyway, I'm still finding my way around here, so if you know Louisville or have any recommendations, hop onto the Discord server and clue me into that cool stuff, huh? So, to recap broadly, there is a new episode of Nerdy Show coming out on Monday, an exclusive, expanded, alternate interview with Pixel Hate, and you should check out Mother, She Wrote, an Earthbound podcast, a show that has a lot of crossover with the work you know and love from Nerdy Show. Half of it is an audio drama, the other half is nerd media chit-chat with yours truly, and occasional interviews with people like Pixel Hate, and Jazzy Benson, another past Nerdy Show guest, and good vibes all around. To further emphasize my point, I would like to play for you the rest of episode 0 of Mother, She Wrote, and the first episode. So you already heard the first part, the bit with Doug and the dream. Anyway, here we go.
Diary about the Mother series.
And you could call it Mother, She Wrote.
Welcome to Mother, She Wrote, a travelogue diary through three of the strangest, most thought-provoking, most heart-rending video games ever made. I'm Kat Blackard.
And I'm Jessica Mudd.
And you're a mother.
I am. And we both live on Earth.
And we both love video games. And therefore, we're uniquely qualified to unpack the Mother series, as it's called in Japan, or the Earthbound series, as it's called in English-speaking countries. A trilogy of role-playing games published by Nintendo, written by the enigmatic multidisciplinary artist Shigesato Itoi.
Every episode, we're going to tell you a piece of that story, as it's lived by the characters and as we play it. And then, we'll peel back the layers and talk about the weird cultural references, the music, and what it all means. But not this episode. This is a place to start, like the part of a game where you name your characters and pick the color of your text windows.
And your favorite food. Mine is pizza.
Mine is also pizza. Or tacos. Or taco pizza.
Or pizza tacos.
But that's a delicious topic for after this recording session. So, Kat, why is the Mother series so special?
Jess, I am very glad you asked. Earthbound is the first postmodern video game. It's a role-playing game set in modern times, made at a time when all RPGs were medieval fantasy. It broke all the rules about the kinds of stories you could tell and what a video game should look and sound like. The Mother series addresses topics like queerness,
late-stage capitalism,
cults and groupthink,
child abuse,
breaking the fourth wall,
police misconduct,
environmental collapse,
the profound power of kindness,
homesickness,
deadbeat fathers,
corrupt politicians,
chronic ailments,
all in an irreverent sci-fi comedy. It is to video games what Talking Heads is to music. Genre-bending, uncompromisingly funky, and surreal pop art, filled to the brim with as much poignant messaging as there is cartoon imagery.
Wowza.
So the Earthbound series. It's three games. One came out in the Nintendo in the 1980s, one came out in the Super Nintendo in the 1990s, and one came out on the Game Boy Advance in 2006. Three games, three decades, and only one of them came out in the United States.
And I have to admit that my first exposure to any of the Earthbound characters was in the Super Smash Brothers series. When Super Smash Brothers, the original one, came out on the Nintendo 64, there was a character called Ness in it. And I would say his most distinguishing feature was his psi powers and his baseball bat.
Yeah. Super Smash Brothers is, of course, a fighting game featuring characters from all across Nintendo's games. But even in that first game, where there were only a handful of characters, big ones like Mario and Pikachu, there was this one character from Earthbound. And that's not the only thing, though. The Smash in Smash Brothers is likely a direct reference to the entire Mother series. In all three Mother games, when you're battling, you can deal a massively destructive Smash attack. And that's like Smash Bros. Whole thing. And Earthbound and Smash Brothers were co-developed by HAL Laboratories, so none of that's probably a coincidence. Learning about Ness and Earthbound through Smash Brothers was a shared experience between you and a lot of people, Jess. Smash Brothers became one of Nintendo's biggest hits, but meanwhile, no one knew about Earthbound in the States. It was considered a massive flop. But the games are huge in Japan, so naturally, Ness was in Smash Brothers, and his appearance there was actually really important to developing the fan following for Earthbound, because a bunch of people playing Smash Brothers thought, who is that? And eventually looked into it and found, much to their surprise, I assume, a very large cult following on the internet. It was at exactly the right time where young people were getting the internet and fan communities were growing, and the fan community for Earthbound became one of the most dedicated fan communities for anything to do with a Nintendo property. The people who did play this game loved it and had never seen anything like it before. Like we said, it's a role-playing game, but the fact that it takes place in modern time really set it apart from everything else. And the game for the Super Nintendo is extremely colorful and psychedelic and extremely strange. So if anybody did play it, it left a big mark. Its differences were also probably why people didn't bother to pick it up in the first place. But if we're speaking to any audience members who are not familiar with the format of the games, like, it is like a Final Fantasy game. You have random enemy encounters and you have items and you select from a menu of different actions you can do when you're in a battle or whatever. It's fighting based. You gain experience, but you're also solving problems, talking to people in towns, making connections, learning things, figuring out social puzzles.
So Earthbound came out in 1994, and you played it pretty close to that release date, right?
Yeah, I rented it from Blockbuster Video.
And eventually acquired your own copy, right?
Yes, which I bought through a mail order subscription service back when you could, like, buy used games from catalogs.
Did you complete the game when you rented it?
No, I didn't. The thing is that I rented it, a friend rented it, we were both super into it, and the KB Toys at our local mall had one copy of it in its big oversized box warming the shelf for ages. And we've been really curious about it. Then we finally tried it out at Blockbuster and we were like, damn, we really like this. And he bought it. He bought the one copy that I knew of in town. So then I was playing his. And then another friend got hooked on it from us getting hooked on it. And then I think I ended up being the last person to get a hold of a copy of it. But I was living vicariously through them for a while.
But Earthbound is your favorite game of all time, right?
That is correct, yeah.
So, Kat, when I first met you and we first began to bond over our mutual love of video games, I at some point asked you what your favorite game was, and you told me that it was Earthbound. And I told you that my favorite game was Final Fantasy VI. And we both discovered that neither of us had played each other's favorite game. And we entered into a bargain of sorts. I would play Earthbound and you would play Final Fantasy VI. And how's that going, by the way?
I'm still playing Final Fantasy VI. A lot of other things have come up, and a lot of other games have been played in the meantime. And it's great. Final Fantasy VI is great. I cannot believe that I missed out on it so long. I knew it was a glaring hole in my video game continuum, and now it is only proving, however many decades later, it's still extremely impressive.
But two Japanese RPGs that came out at roughly the same time, our two favorite games of all time. And now we're going to get to talk about Earthbound and discuss all the fun little strange nuances about it and what makes it so special to you and me getting to experience it much later in life, sort of coming to understand
the headspace that you might have been in when you played it originally. And I'm very much looking forward to getting to have these discussions with you to really dive into this content and explore this.
Earthbound has captured a lot of folks' imaginations and really inspired a lot of young people who have become known adults and creators today, because there's a shocking amount of depth in it. And it is such a radiant piece of pop art. As a young person, I was really into the Beatles. And in any kind of surrealist art or avant-garde art that I saw, I didn't have like MTV growing up. So anything that looked remotely like a music video was really appealing to me. And Earthbound is, with its irreverent humor and its strange sci-fi tropes, and everything about it was like, hey, kid, are you a weirdo? Then you're going to really like this. And in turn, it connects to a lot of other pieces of pop culture. I have discovered existing pieces of pop culture that I now love through Earthbound, because that's the kind of game it is. It is a piece of pop culture made from other pieces of pop culture in this beautiful postmodern collage.
You mentioned the fandom that grew up around this game. What makes it so special, and how did you come to be a part of it?
I think what makes it special is that Earthbound tends to draw in a specific kind of person. Let's say quirky people, thoughtful people, artsy weirdo types that connect with the game's overarching message about the power of love, acceptance, and togetherness in the face of the evil that humanity is capable of. Earthbound is really distinct. And so people who are fans of it tend to connect beyond just liking the same video game. As for me, I got the internet in 1997 when I was in seventh grade, and I was really into Earthbound, so naturally, I looked it up. That same year, Earthbound.net launched, which soon became Starman.net, and that was a constantly active community with news and fan art, all kinds of discussions, big coordinated efforts to bring the rest of the games to the States. And through that site and the love of this oddball game that no one had heard of, Earthbound grew into the biggest cult fandom in video games. Now, on Starman.net, I was more of a lurker than an active participant, but I was always really aware of what was going on. And when there was a call to action, like doing things to try to get the games in the States, I responded in full force. Fast forward a significant amount of time later, though, I'm working as a pop culture journalist, and I have a podcast called Nerdy Show, which is a talk show about nerd media, way back when that was a novel concept. Around that same time, Starman.net had created an English language translation for the third game in the Mother series after years of waiting on Nintendo to do it, and that was huge. Also, around that same time, the company Fangamer, which is now massive, emerged directly from Starman.net. They're a company dedicated to creating high-end fan works across a bunch of video game fandom. So I've been following these people a long time. I was a fan of the work that they were doing, and now I had a platform to talk about what they were up to. So I dropped them a line, I interviewed them on the show, and we became friends. We were all creators building our respective futures based on shared passions. Up until then, I guess you could say I orbited the fandom, but connecting with them directly encouraged me to step up and be more present in it in whatever small part I have been. I've been interviewed for a couple Earthbound documentaries speaking about Mother's place in pop art. I was the host of a retrospective and exploration of Fangamer's immersive Earthbound fan festival, Camp Fangamer, which happened 2 separate years in Tucson, Arizona. Throughout my career as a media journalist, I've written about the Mother series often. It's had a deeply profound influence on me as a creator and as a storyteller, and that influence shows up a lot in what I do. It might not always be obvious, but it's very present.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your passion for the Mother series of games with me. I'm very excited about going on this adventure with you.
Something that we should probably establish here in this episode is a timeline. The Mother series is only 3 games, but only 1 game was originally released in the US, and amidst all of it, there's been different releases, various cancellations, and it gets kind of complicated. And it's important to mention all of it because a huge part of these games being a cult sensation in the States is the American audience trying to get the Japanese games released here and the strange saga of them not coming out. So the first Mother game hits in 1989 in Japan. It's on the Famicom, what we know in the States as the NES, and Nintendo of America translates this game, Mother, into English and renames it Earthbound. However, even though it's totally done, Nintendo doesn't release it. Some magazines mention that it's coming out, but when it doesn't come out, it's entirely forgotten. It's lost to history that there was a game called Earthbound. But then 1994 rolls around, and Mother 2 comes out in Japan, and the next year, it's translated, and it does come out in the States. Again, as Earthbound. So this is the first Earthbound game that's actually come out. No one knows the other one exists. And Mother 2, aka Earthbound, the second game, is on the Super Nintendo in America. It's not a big seller, but the fans who discover it are super passionate about it. And eventually they realize, oh, there was a game before this. And then a ROM copy of Nintendo of America's translation of the first game leaks out on the internet. It's dubbed Earthbound Zero, and it kind of blows people's minds. A lot of people didn't believe it was real, because how is it possible that a game would be translated entirely and not released? That sort of thing doesn't really happen.
But you played Earthbound Zero, right?
Yes. I admit, Nintendo of America, I admit I downloaded the illegal ROM when I was a child, and I played it. But fast forward to 2015, and Earthbound Zero gets released as Earthbound Beginnings on the Virtual Console on the Wii U. So it's out there, and you can play the first two Earthbound games in English in the States or any other English-speaking countries on the Nintendo Switch right now. The Nintendo Switch Online, if you subscribe to that, you can get access to their like catalog of NES games and their catalog of Super Nintendo games, and both the first two Mother games are there. Earthbound Beginnings and Earthbound.
I played Earthbound because you loaned me your Super NES Mini.
Yeah. We live in a golden age where it is possible to get a hold of, but it has been up until recently, like, you know, kind of spotty to get a hold of. Like, when Earthbound was released on the Virtual Console and stuff, that was shocking because for the longest time, it seemed like Nintendo of America, in spite of knowing full well that there was a massive cult following for these games, just didn't care, didn't want to put it out, didn't even want to get a cheap buck. But then there were also concerns about legal issues because it became more and more public knowledge that the score to Earthbound actually samples existing music, which is something that had never happened in a video game before. Fortunately, I guess the legal eagles decided that the sampling was above board, not that it had been approved, but that it was short enough and remixed enough that it does actually constitute as an original work, so everything's fine. I'm not a lawyer, I don't know, and I definitely don't speak for Nintendo of America.
Still, it's not really a surprise that they were hesitant to re-release those games.
But they did, and they were bestsellers when they were things that you could buy independently on the virtual consoles. And now you just subscribe to Nintendo Switch Online, and you just get them. But the thing is about the third game, Mother 3. It was originally announced in 1996 as Earthbound 64, a game that was so big you were going to need an expansion to the Nintendo 64 to play it, one that didn't actually end up coming out in the States, and when it did come out in Japan, it was a flop. It was called the 64DD, a disk drive expansion. And the game was canceled in 2000, which is the year before the GameCube came out, the system that immediately followed the Nintendo 64. And with it, Mother 3 died. But the thing is that because Earthbound had come out in the States, American magazines were covering Earthbound 64 as a game that was coming out. So at the time, especially with the hype of Smash Brothers and Ness being a character in Smash Brothers, all us Earthbound fans on the internet were like, oh my god, there's gonna be an Earthbound game on the Nintendo 64. Can you believe it? This is so crazy. And like, everyone's talking about it. And when that didn't happen, a bunch of children on an internet fan community, which I was a part of, tangentially at least, got together and raised a ruckus and started calling Nintendo of America and and started sending letters and started active, dedicated campaigns to antagonize this company into releasing this game to prove that there was an audience for it.
Smash!
Yeah. So, in Japan, a compilation game for the Game Boy Advance called Mother 1 Plus 2 was released in 2003. And what was interesting about that is that Mother 1 Plus 2, the version of the first game on there, is a Japanese language version of the American translation. There are graphical changes that were made for American audiences that are ported over into the Japanese version of that game. And the run function, which was not in the original Japanese version, is in that game. It's really weird. I don't know why.
Wait, so my brain is getting kind of bent around here now, around this.
I'm sure I'm confusing everybody else. I'm sorry, folks. There are diagrams.
Hey,
I'm going to try to keep this as concise as possible. This is the info dump.
The release schedule of this game just mimics how wild the games are themselves.
Well, and the fan community that's tied and twisted around it. So the important part here is, dear listener, who wants to get a handle on these games, if all this is confusing you, don't worry. We're just going to be talking about the stories more or less going forward. We're just going to be talking about the stories. This is where we're talking about the, like, weird social politics and business politics of these games coming out at all. But it's part of what the scarcity, the demand, and all of this is part of what galvanized the most active fan community for a cult video game that there's ever been.
Before you can build a pizza, you got to make the dough. So that's what we're doing.
Exactly. So in 2003, when Mother 1 Plus 2 came out in the Game Boy Advance in Japan, they said, and we're working on Mother 3. And eventually, in 2006, Mother 3 came out on the Game Boy Advance. Everyone was asking, okay, now, so you're going to bring it to the States, right? And they didn't. 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 And so eventually, the game was translated by a dedicated fan community.
The fan community steps up again.
And all these stories are so immersive and complicated and interesting. I'm not qualified to tell them. And fortunately, I don't have to. Because those two documentaries that I'm interviewed in, well, they're about both of these things. The first one's called Mother to Earth, that's T-O, which is about how the first game was translated in the States, but then not released, and then leaked out to the internet, which is something that had never happened before, and the weird saga of how that happened, who translated it, how it leaked out to the internet, and all the strange world of trading bootleg video game cartridges and stuff, and it might sound a little bit insider baseball, but it is a deeply fascinating documentary that's really well done. You can check out more about that at mother2earth.com. Again, that's T-O. And then the other documentary is called Earthbound USA. It's coming out later this year. It's a film by Jazzy Benson, made in-house by Fangamer. Essentially, it's the story of this incredible fan community that's come together to create friendships and families and lifelong partnerships and businesses, incredible multimedia convention experiences, and basically what the impact of Earthbound is and how the games not being released in the States were a part of that impact. How these teenagers from all over America got together and became a family through this weird circumstance with this incredibly strange game series at the epicenter of it.
That is really a heartwarming tale.
New episodes of Mother, She Wrote release every other week on Mondays, or Mom Days if you like a mnemonic device. Jess and I are playing the games in segments, and each episode opens with a short, immersive audio drama exploring the story from the perspective of the characters to pull you into the adventure, even if you've never played the games before. And then, Jess and I discuss all the fascinating details in the game and behind the scenes.
I'm going to be recording my play sessions and posting them to YouTube. So if you want to follow along, you're welcome to come do that.
Jess, I'm so excited to share this with you.
It was really a lot of fun to play Earthbound and get to share the wild and zany things that were happening in real time. And I'm so looking forward to getting to dive into that again.
And now, Episode 1 of Mother, She Wrote. Bump in the Night.
Thank you. howling house.
Okay. This is crazy, but you should do that.
Sometimes that kid.
At the very least, try being apathetic.
I don't know how I feel about that.
See? You've already got the hang of it.
Tonight on Unresolved Mysteries, the story of George and Maria, a young married couple who disappeared mysteriously from their home in 1908. 2 years later, suddenly as he left, George returned alone. Once a renowned journalist, he became a recluse and an inventor, studying strange energies. He never told anyone where he'd been, what he had done, or what became of his missing wife. It happened in this house, in the quiet town of Podunk. George and Maria's children returned home from school to find their house empty. Their parents vanished without a trace. This was the last in a series of strange happenings preceded, they say, by a dark shadow hovering at the summit of distant Mount Itoi.
Ninten, what did I tell you?
Mom, I
don't want you watching our family be slandered on TV.
But everyone else will. They're going to be talking about us.
And like always, you're going to ignore them, young man.
But, Mom, what happened with Great-Grandpa? Why won't you talk about it?
Because there's nothing to say, Ninten. All you need to know is that he didn't kill your great-grandma. And that it's bedtime. Now come here and give me a hug. I love you, Ninten. Now, scoot.
But... Friday, April 1st, 1980. Dear Diary, I don't get it. Mom talks to me about everything, but she won't talk to me about this. She's been so weird lately, and it's been worse ever since that TV crew tried to interview us. I've never seen her so mad or heard someone say, "Mind your own beeswax," so threateningly. It sounded like a cuss. All she'll say is that Great-Grandpa George didn't kill Great-Grandma Maria. But she won't say a word about the other stuff people say. Like how he was investigating a bunch of disappearances and weird stuff happening around town when they both disappeared. How, when he came back, his hair was all white. And the cloud. I've seen her watching the cloud over Mount Itoi. A big, dark cloud hovering at the top, just like people say happened back then, before everything. When I ask her about any of it, she says I'm going to give myself an asthma attack. But I'm not scared. I just want to know. I know she knows something. She looks really worried when she looks at the cloud. The last time I asked her about it, she said it was probably the TV show using a smoke machine to spook people. Whoa! Hey! Okay, so, my lamp attacked me. It was hovering in the air. It unplugged itself and came at me. It wrapped its power cord around my wrist, but I grabbed the cord and I smashed it up against the wall. Then, everything in the house started vibrating. I heard Mimi and Minnie screaming. I ran to help and they were being attacked too. The doll that belonged to Great-Grandma Maria had Mimi pinned against the wall. I pulled it off her and bashed it against the floor. And then this music box started playing inside the doll. That song Mom used to hum at bedtime. And everything stopped moving. All the stuff that was floating fell on the ground. Gosh, this is going to be a lot for Mom and the twins to clean up. I feel bad skipping out, but, well, this is going to be my last entry for a while. It's... all kind of a blur. Things happened pretty fast. Mom was freaked out, and then out of the blue, Dad called. It was like he knew when we needed him. It would have been even better if he'd just shown up here in person. But anyway, he called what happened a poltergeist. It's like a big paranormal disturbance where stuff moves around like it's being controlled by something else. Just like what great-grandpa was investigating. But that's the other thing. It's all happening like it did back then. Mom had hoped it wouldn't come to this, but she and Dad told me everything. It's true that no one knows what happened to great-grandma Maria or where they disappeared to, but great-grandpa spent the rest of his life studying something called psychokinetic energy. Dad called it PSI for short. All that stuff about me that Mom told me was special, but I should keep it to just the family. Like being able to hear what animals are thinking, and sometimes people too. Or that time all the silverware bent when I got angry at dinner. That's these powers that my great-grandpa was studying. It has something to do with all of this. It's like a defense. Something to make sure that what happened before doesn't happen again. So Dad said, it's time for you to go on a little adventure. Mom's worried, but also she looked really proud. Like she knew this would happen someday. The stuff that made me different from everyone else is why it's gotta be me. Mom's always told me to trust my gut, and she's right. Sometimes I just know things. Like, I'm scared. I mean, I'm a kid about to leave my home to stop. I don't even know what it is. But I know that I'm going to walk out the door. I'm going to find what's doing this. And I'm going to stop it. I have great-grandpa's diary now. It's up to me to protect my family. And I'll mess up any appliance that tries to stop me. Writing all this took longer than I thought. I've got to go, but Mom, Mimi, Minnie, Dad, if you're reading this, I love you. I hope you're okay. Dear Mother, hopefully, by the time you receive this letter, Podunk will have been saved by yours truly. But in the meantime, Mom, please don't go outside. Things are really weird out here. People's brains are messed up. Mr. Patchouli, the hippie who sells those bracelets at the farmer's market, he attacked me. And the birds and stray dogs, I had to fight some of them. But, great-grandpa was right. The psychokinetic energy, I can feel it. When someone's not right, I can kind of hypnotize them, make them fall asleep. And when I get scraped up, I can make my wounds heal a bit. It's like I'm talking to my body and asking it to stitch itself back together. And I think I'm a government employee now. I'm not sure. I met Mayor Goodman. I heard he was looking for a brave man. So, since I'm a professional adventurer now, I went to City Hall. I leaned on my bat, looking real cool, and said, Mr. Mayor, I'm your man. I think he was really impressed. My friend from school, Pippi, you know, the tomboy with braids, she's missing. Mayor Goodman heard she was in the cemetery and told me I'd be a hero if I brought her back home. By the time you get this letter, maybe I'll be on TV for having saved her. The thing is, though, Mom, I don't want you to worry, but I'm pretty scared. I saw a dead person today, and I know you told me not to talk to strangers. I just kind of need to now, you know, for clues. Well, there was this skinny guy who started talking to me, and before I knew it, he was clawing at me with these long nails. He was cold and he smelled like dirt. It was a zombie. I mean, a real zombie. People were saying around town that the dead were coming back to life, and I thought, well, maybe they were a little loopy like everyone else, but it was real. I fought him, and when my bat crashed into his head, he was all brittle and his whole body turned to dust. This didn't happen when great-grandpa and grandma disappeared, right? I think it's really serious this time. Like, whatever happened before, that was just a test. And this is the beginning of something really serious. But I've got this feeling, like, I'm not alone. I know you and Mimi and Minnie and Dad are here, but there's other people too. Maybe other people like me out there. And I'm scared, but great-grandpa sacrificed a lot so I could be here. I'm not gonna let him down. I'm not gonna let you down. And I'm not gonna be like great-grandpa. He pushed his family away. Me? I miss you already. And I'm gonna write you every step of the way, Mom. And I promise I'll visit as often as I can. When things get tough, I can hear you. Like when you're helping me with my homework but won't give me the answer, or when you let go of my bike for the first time. I'm out there on my own, teetering, but you say, "You can do it, kiddo." And I can. Love, Ninten.
Welcome to Mother, She Wrote, a travelogue diary through the strangest, most thought-provoking, most heart-rending video games ever made, the Earthbound series, as it's called in English-speaking countries, and Mother, as it's called in Japan. This is the story of the first game in that series, Earthbound Beginnings. I'm Kat Blackard, just a small-town girl, fighting wildlife in a lonely world, and with me is my simply smashing co-host,
Jessica Mudd. And by wildlife, I assume you mean the extremely dapper crows, bats, and other critters roaming around Podunk.
Well, yeah, and Wally the Farmer. That guy is a real animal on a Saturday night.
Or a Friday afternoon, as it turns out. I mean, seriously. One moment, you're just a kid relaxing in his bedroom, and the next, your house is shaking, dolls and furniture are attacking you, and your neighbors are turning into zombies. School's out forever.
If you haven't listened to episode zero, I'd highly recommend it. We discuss a broad overview of the series, the release dates, the fan culture behind it, as well as our own relationships with these games, which might help with the context of what Jess and I are about to discuss here. Maybe, kind of, sort of, who knows. But it'll give you a full perspective behind the scenes beyond just the story that appears in the game. The first thing that I'm very excited to address here, because we haven't talked about it yet. Jess, you've played Earthbound before, but now you've gone back and started playing Earthbound Beginnings. What do you think?
Well, let me just start off by saying that I was very impressed by the level of complication and polish, I guess I can say, in this game, and how much it resembled Earthbound, how much of Earthbound came from Earthbound Beginnings. I was shocked to see that level of complexity in an NES RPG, just because the other games that I'm comparing it to are like Final Fantasy and Dragon Warrior, games that I played back on the NES. And to see something that very closely resembles a Super NES game was really, it caught me off guard. I was not expecting that. The overall level of presentation, the music, the graphics, the sound effects, everything just, it seemed like it really kind of reached a level that was vastly superior to a lot of other NES games that came out around that same time. Now, I know that Earthbound Beginnings is sort of, they've refined it a little bit. They did a translation for it, an official translation, and they added some quality of life improvements to it as well. But I don't think they really changed any of like the graphics or music or anything like that.
Well, they did censor some of the graphics, but they didn't change the music. The game that you've played in 2022 is the game that was translated by Nintendo of America in the late 80s.
That is just wild to me. It really is, because Earthbound came out in the United States in 1995, and the first Mother game came out in Japan in 1989. And there's so much that is advanced about Earthbound Beginnings that I was really impressed by it, which is kind of ironic because a lot of the criticisms that I had about Earthbound revolved around the user interface and the gameplay and some of the things that just sort of like seemed to bog it down at times. The amount of grinding that was required to sort of level your characters up, navigating through the menus, the limited inventory. And it's like, here I am like, oh my gosh, it's all the exact same on the Nintendo.
Yeah.
And this is fantastic. Uh-huh, uh-huh, How did they do this?
All those things that you just said and worse in this game. But now, because of this historical context, you're applauding it.
I know. It's bizarre.
Here we are.
But here we are. So maybe it's because I've played Earthbound already that I sort of intuitively understand how all this works in Earthbound Beginnings. And so I don't find it as daunting. The learning curve is not as steep. But just even some of the basic tropes of how you interact with the world, the fact that you talk to your dad through the telephone, or that your mom, you come back and talk to her and, you know, she makes you dinner and then sends you to bed. And that's how you restore your health. The fact that those sort of tropes were established in this game and carried through to Earthbound was really stunning to me.
Yeah. And, you know, the people who were localizing this game for English speaking audiences, they thought it was going to be the next big thing because role-playing games were huge hits in Japan. They didn't move the needle in the States. Nintendo of America at the time thought maybe Earthbound could do it, but then they lost interest. They decided it was like too much of an expensive risk to bother marketing it or whatever, but they did already spend a lot of money on it. So it was a strange thing when they pulled the plug on it, because in that context, it either would have been another expensive flop for role-playing games, or it could have changed everything.
I mean, I guess it would have been an expensive flop. I mean, they already did all the work. The game was developed. They did the translation for it. All they had to do was just print the cartridges.
They had to market it, though. They didn't spend any marketing money yet.
How much did they really market Earthbound?
A lot. They spent so much money marketing Earthbound, and done by a bunch of people who had no idea what they were doing. They didn't know how to sell that game.
I mean, gosh, I was a gamer. I was a big gamer in the mid-90s. A huge gamer. And the first that I ever learned about Earthbound was in Super Smash Brothers. So how do they spend that much marketing on it and not reach somebody like me?
You don't remember opening GamePro magazine and seeing that scratch and sniff ad? Like that said, like, in big letters, "This game stinks"?
No, I don't remember that. And I had and I read GamePro religiously. So I don't know. Something about it just didn't land.
Clearly. I mean, they spent a lot of money and you didn't know about it. So clearly they failed. And even if you had known about it, you might not have thought, I want to play this game, which is the case for other folks.
I don't know. Maybe I was just already inundated with other game media or something, because I can't really explain it. I was very in tune with gaming culture, and the Super Nintendo is my favorite console of all time. So it's like, how did I miss this? I don't know. If they were spending a lot of money marketing that game, it was probably not well spent.
No,
or well done.
It was tragic. It was truly tragic.
But that's okay, because now I can be dazzled 30 years later.
Yeah. Earthbound Beginnings. We are going to make a lot of comparisons to Earthbound, because that is the game that the world over more people have played. And here's a comparison I like to use an analogy. Earthbound Beginnings is to Earthbound as Star Fox is to Star Fox 64. That is, Star Fox 64, beyond all the stuff about it that's new and flashy, is just a remake of Star Fox. It's the same plot, there's just more stuff. And that is really similar with Earthbound Beginnings, except that it's not a remake. There's many things that are similar. There are many, like, patterns to it. You know, like calling your dad on the phone to save the game, using an ATM to get cash, talking to your mom. There are many, 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 many similarities, but the core plot is different. It is a standalone story that actually does inform and provide additional context for the events of Earthbound.
Interesting.
So this is very much the first game in the series. This is very much the beginning of a story.
All right, so let's talk about what happened in the game. So it kind of opens up with this text intro that says, 80 years ago, there was a couple named George and Maria who suddenly disappeared for 2 years. George comes back, but Maria is still lost. And it says that George began a private study or research or something like that. But it doesn't really expand on that. 80 years later is the beginning of Earthbound Beginnings. It's kind of where we pick up. They don't like explicitly say it, but I'm guessing that the little boy, the main character that you play as, is the great-grandson of George and Maria. And the private study that George was engaging in is the study of these like psionic abilities.
Correct.
That the child has.
It's weird how they both say it in a lot of different ways, but they also don't explicitly put that together for you, even while providing all this information. The game gives you an opening crawl with this story that is really, really, really important to the plot of the game.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't come back into the story again until much later. And as it's being seeded, it's only when you're really, really paying attention to it. You have to do a lot of legwork to put it together. And this is important to exploring Earthbound Beginnings, because Earthbound Beginnings as a game is impressionistic. It is as big a game as Earthbound in terms of the scope of what it was trying to say and do. But because of the technological limits of the game itself, you only get fragments of it. It implies a great deal, but there's two pieces of media that exist outside of it that help give it the full expansive nature that Earthbound has. And that's a book that was published by Ape, Shigesato Itoi's company that produced Earthbound, called The Mother Encyclopedia. And then also there's a musical album that a lot of the songs from this game have lyrics, have full orchestral treatment. And those two things together explain the scope of what this game was in the minds of its creators, and also possibly in the minds of the Japanese audience that received it. It was a hit.
And you happen to have a copy of that book, right?
I do indeed, yes. This book is in Japanese with one notable exception, but it does have a lot of pictures, which are photographs that really help ground the way you're meant to perceive what's happening in the game.
Wow.
But also, the encyclopedia has been, or is in the process of being translated currently. There's a website where someone named Kenisu is translating the Mother Encyclopedia. We'll link to it on the show's page, and it's been really invaluable. We'll be reading from it in this episode.
All right. So one of the first questions that I have was, after we did this sort of like intro story thing, it has you go through and name the characters. Mm-hmm. And I usually like to just accept the default names for characters in RPGs so that when I'm discussing them with other people, I can just use the names of, you know, what they're normally called in the story. I tried to just like accept, you know, the default or whatever, just do whatever it wanted. It didn't seem to let me do that, so I ended up putting in my own character names.
There are default names, but they don't exist within the game itself. Maybe they're in the instruction booklet or something.
So the little boy's name is canonically Ninten, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But I would have no way of knowing that playing the game.
Right.
So how do you know that the character's name is Ninten?
Because of all the material surrounding it. For example, in the Earthbound Encyclopedia, it says, like, your name is Ninten, but then it also says, or you could choose another name. That's fine, too.
All right, so I named the main character Tom.
Which is a great name.
I know it's going to be getting, it will get confusing if I'm referring to Tom while we're talking about this. So I feel like I should probably just refer to him as Ninten going forward.
That's the least confusing path forward for us, yes.
All right. The next character that I named was the girl character, and I named her Rachel.
Her name is Anna.
Anna, okay. And I swear, I'm literally thinking about just going back and replaying the first section of this game just so I can name them properly, because otherwise it's really going to get confusing. All right. The other little boy that I named, I named him Stanley. So what's his actual name?
Lloyd.
Okay, I'm sticking with Stanley. Lloyd, okay. And then finally, the big muscle-bound dude with the sunglasses, I named him Bruce.
Your name selections are impeccable. I love them. His name's Teddy.
Teddy. Okay. Yeah, maybe I'm just going to stick with my own character names.
I mean, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Well, but what was your favorite food?
My favorite food? Oh, yes, of course, because you got to put food. Well, my favorite food is pizza, so that is, you know, what I put in.
My favorite food, as we discussed in episode zero, is also pizza. However, I was so charmed by how many letter slots you get to I mean, because, like, you know, Nintendo games, older NES games are notorious for, like, not giving you long spaces to, like, you know, insert in names and stuff. But they gave you so many characters, and I was like, wow, this is so much real estate. I know. I wonder if I could fit in Okonomiyaki, or as they would call it in Ranma One Half, Japanese pizza.
Fantastic.
And it fit exactly.
Wow.
But the default favorite food is prime rib.
Prime rib, okay. But you wouldn't know that unless you read the supplemental material.
Exactly. So, you know, is that flawed? Yes, it is flawed. But I'm not sure that there's another video game from this era that does this. Another video game that has so much supplemental material that expands canonically what is in the game and helps ground it. That's highly unusual.
All right. So after I named these characters, I started off in my bedroom, like I said. And I just kind of experimented around a little bit, kind of learning the controls. So you're telling me that the run button was not in the original version of this game?
Nope.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
And you know what? I never used it again after that moment, after discovering it.
Really?
I remembered. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. I guess I was just taking in all the scenery, but...
You are pretty chill. I also noticed that you didn't set your battle screen text speed in the options menu.
Wait, there's a... Oh, you can do that?
You can make it go much faster.
Oh my gosh, yes, I need to turn that on. Okay, thank you for telling me that. That's very good to know. So, the moment I tried to step out of my bedroom door, the first thing that happens is my lamp jumps off and it attacks me. Like, okay, this is a way to start a game. And so I had to defeat my lamp to walk out the door.
It immediately makes a statement. It says, like, hey, this game takes place in modern times. Now you're fighting a lamp. And it doesn't explain why until the event is over.
Yeah.
And your dad over the phone posits that it maybe was a poltergeist. When you defeat two lamps and a child's doll, it says the phenomenon has stopped for the moment.
And there was a melody that was inside of the doll as well.
And Nintendo remembered that.
That's right. He did. Which I'm glad he did, because I didn't. Even though I listened to it twice. But this also brings me to my favorite song of this first session of playing through. And that is the music while the house is shaking. That was a banger. That was some rockin' music. And, you know, talking about the musical capabilities of the NES, I was like, this is fantastic. There was a lot of great music in this first session of playing through the game. But that one was really like it. I was like, you know, I was rocking out there for a little bit.
The music in Earthbound, or the first two Earthbound games, is by Keiichi Suzuki and Hip Tanaka, and they are really amazing composers. Keiichi Suzuki is in a band called Moonriders, and weirdos made this music, and it shows. Really, all of Earthbound is kind of like outsider art in a kind of weird way. These are all people who are professional artists outside the medium of video games figuring out how to do video games, and it shows, like, nothing about this is normal.
Fantastically absurd.
Yeah, it's so much cooler for it.
All right, so after expunging the poltergeist from the house, I guess, I walk downstairs, and does Nintendo have two sisters? Yeah. So he has
two twin sisters.
Two twin sisters, okay. So his other twin sister was downstairs, and his mom was downstairs kind of guarding the door. Because I guess she didn't want you to walk outside until you had talked to Dad on the phone. And this was when my favorite moment of dialogue happened during this first playthrough. And that was when Mom said, I wish your dad were here now. Maybe.
Right.
Like,
what does that mean?
Yes. And, you know, it's like, okay, maybe I wish your dad were here. But, I don't know. Maybe. Not sure about it. It's like, he might just make the situation worse.
I have so many questions about that translation. I don't know what the answer to it is, because they could be two unrelated lines. It could be like, I wish your dad was here. And then, like, she starts having a thought like, maybe he'll come back, or maybe it was a poltergeist, you know, like,
yeah,
maybe could mean a lot of things. But according to this book, Ninten's dad left when he was 5 years old on what he assumes is like a business trip or something. So the twins were born, Ninten's five. Immediately following that, father would end up going to some faraway place, probably job-related. Like, that's all you know.
Probably job-related.
You know, he still calls.
Yeah.
He still, like, has a regular relationship there, but your dad's a phone. Like, that's dad.
And that stays consistent through Earthbound as well.
Yeah. And what that means, and what it says, and what it is talking about, is the subject of constant fan discourse.
Constant fan discourse.
Yeah, I mean, like, the mystery of Ninten and Ness's dads, and, like, who they are, what them being gone all the time means, what their relationship is, what it is they're doing, that is a source of, like, speculation. Like, what does it mean meta-contextually? What might it mean actually in the plot of the game?
Got it. I see. So Dad tells me that there are some items in the basement that could be beneficial to me, but he doesn't remember where he left the key, so that's the first thing that I need to do is to find that key. And it just so happened to be on the collar of the dog who was outside that I went up and said hello to. And I misread the text when I was playing through the game because I thought it was saying that you can't talk to animals. And I was like, there's this dog that's walking around two legs. You like seriously telling me that, you know, I can't talk to this dog or whatever. But anyway, I understand now that you actually can talk to animals, and the dog seems very friendly, and he had the key around his collar, so.
There's a lot of interesting things about Ninten. It explicitly states, essentially, that Ninten is telepathic. The only psychokinetic ability that you have early on in the game is telepathy, and you can talk to different species. So you can talk to your pet dog, Mick, and he tells you where the key is. And I love that. Something about Ninten having that power makes me think about Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys. And I feel like even though it's not explicitly stated, the Beach Boys do have a presence in the Mother series, and I feel like this idea of a psychic child talking to his household dog feels like maybe from that same cultural fabric as Good Vibrations.
So then I took the key inside, I unlocked the basement door, and I went down there, and I found a plastic bat, GGF's diary, which I assume was great-grandfather's diary.
Correct.
And then also some bread.
Basement bread.
Which, if it's been down there for 10 or for 5 years, you know, because, you know, if Dad didn't remember where he left the key and he's been gone for 5 years, then that bread's been down there for a while.
Well, I'll tell you what. As soon as I left my house, that bread was gone because I fought a crow. First thing the crow did was took my damn bread.
Oh, those thieving crows. Well, you know what? He can have the basement bread.
I want to do an aside about the bread because the bread is an interesting item. It is both a life recovery item. You can eat it, but you can also use it.
What?
You can leave a trail of breadcrumbs and then return to where you came from using the bread.
What? Really?
Yeah.
So what, like you like create a set point with the bread and then like you go somewhere else and then you use it again and it's like, you know, you just like zip back to it?
Well, it's been a long time since I've played the game and I'd love to tell you how the bread works, but unfortunately the crow took it, so I haven't used it again.
Well, that'll be an experiment for a future game session. So I'm looking forward to figuring out how bread works. Although, I don't know, the crow may have taken mine as well. The crow stole something from me.
Ninten's 12, by the way, so his dad's been gone for 7 years at this point.
Wow. All right. 7-year-old basement bread. We can do better. And we do better. But don't ever say our dad didn't give us anything. So I set out. And then immediately got attacked by a hippie, which also had some really good music. That hippie was rocking. And he tried to use a bullhorn to trick me into thinking that my mother was calling for me. This is one of the things that I love about the Mother games is that the enemies that you fight, sometimes they'll just do nothing. Sometimes they will take an action that hurts themselves. It's really kind of random. And it always has like very interesting flavor associated with it, like the hippie's bullhorn.
The battles are text-based, but they're all really character-driven.
Yeah.
Like, none of these creatures exist in a vacuum just to be a punching bag, exactly. Like, the Mr. Baddies, who you encounter later on, Mr. Baddie gets confused. When Mr. Baddie gets confused, Mr. Baddie can hit himself.
Yeah.
And that's so strange. You have to deal with these like eccentric entities that don't behave in ways that you can necessarily anticipate unless you figure it out.
And Mr. Batty insists on an honorific.
That's true. The hippie is my favorite enemy of this section of the game for the reason specifically of the bullhorn saying that your mother's calling you. But a runner-up is the crow and the zombie gangster. But the thing about both those characters is both those characters were censored in the U.S. release. So they're much cooler enemy designs in Japan. The zombie gangster is covered in bullet holes, like bloody bullet holes.
Wow.
And the crow, first of all, the crow's wearing high heels. The crow's wearing pumps.
Yeah.
And has a feathered wing, you know, like extended towards you.
Mm-hmm.
That crow's smoking a cigarette.
Oh.
That's a cigarette-smoking crow wearing pumps. That's a street-walking crow in your neighborhood. Stealing my bread.
So that's a working crow.
Yeah. Basically, this poltergeist thing happens, and a state of mass hysteria descends across the countryside. Things are not right. This poltergeist event was not just Ninten's house. You know, like, a lot of people are affected by this, and you get this in dialogue from the game. And the fact that you're fighting farmers like Wally and the hippies and so forth, and that when you beat them in battle, it says that they return to their senses. Like, these are people who maybe they're being perceived like by the game as like weaker-minded people or something, people who have fallen under the influence of whatever's going on here. And when they talk about the zombies, there's a woman in town that implies that, like, you know, maybe someone or something is controlling them. The zombies themselves, they're not mindless, like, speechless zombies. They talk. They antagonize you. They pretend to be normal people and attack you.
Yeah.
There's a normal human in town who can mistake you for a zombie. He asks, "Be honest, you're a zombie, aren't you?" And if you say yes, he says, "Oh, there's no cure for being a zombie." And then he runs away. But if you say no, he asks you,
"Are
like,
you human?"
Yeah. And then he says something that's like really, this would have been so revolutionary in 1990 when this game would have come out in the States. He says, "You see, don't tell anybody, but I'm so scared, I wet my pants."
Hmm.
Which is my favorite line of dialogue in there.
Wow.
Body humor like that was unheard of in video games. Like, it's all over Earthbound, but it would have been nutso if that happened in 1990.
But actually, you mentioned Wally a little bit ago. Wally is actually my favorite enemy of this section of the game. Because it's just, I don't know, it was like so random. It's like you're out walking around and like, here's this dude with his overalls and a pitchfork. And he's just like, "I don't like kids. We're going to fight now." And you just like wallop the crap out of him. And then he comes back later and it's like you do it again. And it's like, you know. Well, I just got beat up by a 12-year-old. I guess I'll go back to work in the fields now.
Wally was probably already adversarial, and the fact that like something is going on screwing with people's brains is just exacerbating what was already there.
But we showed him.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The first point of conflict, once you get out in the world, your dad says that like something's going on, you got to get your great-grandfather's diary and so on and so forth. But like the first point of conflict is a little girl's missing, Pippi.
Right, yeah.
So as part of the Mother Encyclopedia, there is a fold-out newspaper that happens to be in English. It's the only part of the thing that's in English. And it's called the Mother's Day Times because all of the town names are changed between the English and the Japanese versions. Podunk is called Mother's Day.
Hmm.
All the towns are named after holidays.
Really?
American holidays specifically. And I love this, and I'm really bummed out that they changed it in the English version. I think that it's much more interesting as Mother's Day.
Yeah.
You can't win them all.
But there's a thing here. It says it's an article on the front page of the newspaper. Little Pippi missing. A 7-year-old girl, Pippi, living in the suburb of Mother's Day, has not returned home since last Wednesday, and her parents have asked police to search for her. According to her mother, Lindgren, little Pippi was wearing a pink one-piece dress and yellow socks and tying her hair with a yellow ribbon when she left her house. The investigation has been progressing slowly, partly because Miss Lindgren has been quite upset, repeating "What shall we do?" 256 times in response to the police inquiry. The only helpful clue so far is the report by a man who saw a little girl like Pippi at a South cemetery. You can tell that this is not particularly ironclad English. Yellow socks found near the Chew Cream Zoo yesterday were not long and have since proved not to be hers. Because, of course, Pippi is a reference to Pippi Longstocking. So if the socks aren't long, then they ain't Pippi socks. Here's something I think is interesting about Podunk. It seems like it's a slightly more metropolitan town than Onet is in Earthbound. It has a department store, for example. Like, maybe they're comparable in size. According to the encyclopedia, it's still kind of a small town. It was developed as a commuter town for people who work in the neighboring town of Thanksgiving. Now it's a popular tourist city where the main industries are agriculture and sightseeing. The town's slogan is, "Let's make this a town that makes you want to whistle." And the town symbol is a red carnation, which are in the beds all throughout the town. And your grandfather was a newspaper man in Mother's Day.
And yeah, like the department store, like it's a tall building too. It's like there's like 5 levels to that thing. So yeah, this appears to be a larger town than I would have assumed from the name Podunk.
But the government is a mess. The mayor is crooked. He wants you to find the little girl so he'll look good for re-election.
Yeah. So he sends a 12-year-old to go to the cemetery where one child has already been presumed missing.
Yeah.
What does he think is going to happen?
I guess he's less worried about the PR of another child missing. I don't know.
Hey, kid, you've got a plastic bat and you look like you know how to use it. And you're the hero of this game. So go solve this problem.
But if it does work, you know, he's going to take the credit for it.
That's true.
The citizenry are not big fans of him, though. According to the encyclopedia, the citizens often say, "Our taxes are so that the mayor can buy, over and over, replacement high-class pillows for his afternoon nap."
I guess, the question is, who is his opponent? And maybe we should be supporting them instead.
Hopefully there's some cool upstart out there. Nintendo's mom.
Yeah. She can run on a pizza platform. She's got my vote. So one thing that I noticed, too, is I was defeated a couple of times by the monsters. And it did this thing where the sort of game over screen was Ninten sitting in the center of the screen. There was a spotlight shining down on him. And it was basically asking, like, well, you got defeated. Are you going to get back up and start, you know, fighting again? Or do you want to give up? And it's a very interesting game over screen, very similar to the one that's in Earthbound.
Yeah.
I never really kind of understood what to make of it. It's like, is this supposed to be literally like you've been defeated by this creature? You're sort of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, facing death, and you're clawing your way back to life to continue the journey or giving up? It's like, you know, so what's this screen all about?
I think that is more or less it. It's like a space inside your mind, maybe on the verge of death, maybe just like as you're like, you're blacking out or you're tired. It's an internal space where there's a force that like is one of the many fourth wall breaking forces of the game asking you from beyond, like, hey, kid, you're tired. Like, do you want to quit or do you want to keep going? And, you know, if you say yes, it says Ninten, return to the fighting scene.
Pretty soon after that, I made it to the graveyard, which is where I stopped because that's where you told me to stop. So
the graveyard where Pippi is, like, that's according to the encyclopedia, more than half buried are soldiers killed in action, but among them are also graves of martyred gangsters.
Oh, that explains the gangster zombies.
Yeah. And also suggests, like, you know, maybe because Podunk is more metropolitan, maybe Podunk or maybe the next town over, I don't remember what it's called in English, but let's say Mother's Day and Thanksgiving, maybe there's like a kind of like a Chicago like kind of, you know, kind of vibe.
Oh yes, the Thanksgiving outfit. Watch out for them.
Yeah, they're gonna put you to sleep with the Thanksgiving typewriter,
give you some gravy boat shoes.
Yeah. the first time I got killed was the first time I was fighting a zombie. And I was like, oh, okay, I've got to get back to leveling. There are times in Earthbound and Earthbound Beginnings where you do have to like actively grind. But I think if you're committed to exploring the region and you walk around, generally I've found that if you just do a good job of staying alive and fighting the enemies, you will just naturally get where you need to go in terms of trajectory.
Yeah.
I did start working towards a goal, though, because there was a wooden bat at the department store, and I was like, I want to upgrade my weapon.
Yeah.
So I fought until I got that $500 that I needed to get there, which didn't take too much. So I entered the graveyard at level 6 with a wooden bat.
Well, I thought about going for the wooden bat, but I was in a hurry to get to the graveyard.
My favorite piece of music, which I'll say in closing, is the overworld music, which is called Pollyanna, I Believe in You. It's a really fun, jaunty tune. And on the Mother album, it has vocals sung by Catherine Warwick. I think when you listen to the album version, it really gives a sense of like, Shigesato Itoi wrote a movie. Earthbound is a movie or a television series in the form of a Nintendo role-playing game. And it has a book's worth of like background material, and it has a soundtrack that's like professionally produced. And that wasn't uncommon at the time, like doing like special versions of soundtracks in Japan for video games. But there's a scope here. There's a scope and a gravity here that is what happens when you give a creator carte blanche to create a world. It's probably a good thing for us to close out on here in this first episode, explaining a little bit more about who Shigesato Itoi is. He's a guy who, at the time that he first ended up talking to Shigeru Miyamoto at Nintendo, he was a famous copywriter. That is, someone who writes text on like posters. He was an actual celebrity in Japan for his use of words. So he was the guy who wrote the slogans on the posters for the Studio Ghibli movies. He also played the dad in My Neighbor Totoro. He's not normally an actor, but every now and then he does acting. And these slogans, the way that they were regarded, it's like he's a poet. It's like they're haikus. He had the capacity to like create these simple statements that people found to be quite powerful, so much so that he got well known for it. The most screen time that he's received in America is on Iron Chef. He was a reoccurring judge. He's an incredible writer, a creator who's never been limited by any kind of medium. He's still working today and has a really interesting place in a lot of different, you know, arts communities. And the Mother series is the biggest, weirdest project he's ever been a part of. But he was famous before it happened. It was like having a celebrity game writer. And they said, okay, cool, you can do that. At the time, the president of Nintendo was Hiroshi Yamauchi, and he wanted to support new talent in game design. So he was like, hey, what if you made a company and I'll back it and you can make a game for Nintendo? And that's how Ape, the company that put out the first two games, was created. Ape got dismantled after Earthbound and became Creatures Incorporated, who co-developed Pokemon.
Wowza.
Hip Tanaka, who co-wrote the music, is currently the CEO of Creatures Incorporated.
That's quite a link.
It's a link to the past, which is another game and another show. There's a lot of interesting connections throughout all of Earthbound, but all of it spirals back to the incredible creativity of Shigesato Itoi and his collaborators, all of whom pull from the media that they love to create something truly unique in the form of this trilogy of games.
Something else that I noticed too is that in, you know, most RPGs, when you defeat an enemy, you collect gold off of them or loot or money or whatever. But Earthbound Beginnings does this a little bit differently. You don't really sort of accumulate money from defeating enemies, but rather you have an ATM card and your father puts money into your account that is based on the enemies that you're defeating or how much progress that you're making. And so, you know, before you can get that money, you have to go find an ATM machine and withdraw it, and then you can go spend it. You know, what's Dad doing here? Is he just like...
In the encyclopedia, he says, the Earth's crisis will take money. I guess that's just his perspective on it, you know? He's there for you whenever you need him.
Yeah.
He wants to make sure that you've got the funds you need. But, you know, Dad wants to see you kick some ass. And if he kicks some ass, then he gives you money. So, sure.
Okay. Well, who am I to argue?
It is strange, though. Like, where is he? What is he doing?
Yeah. How's he keeping track of how many neighbors you're beating up?
Yeah, I think it's because you're telling him. You call him on the phone and you tell him.
Oh, you tell him about what you did. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because, you know, obviously we're doing this podcast, Mother, She Wrote, but the one character that we can confirm that you're talking to all the time and literally telling them about what you're doing is calling your dad on the phone. But the game's called Mother, and the only, like, the biggest on-screen relationship that you have on an emotional level is with your mom, because your dad is just like, I don't know, it's weird. It's a weird relationship.
Well, that brings up a good point. Why is it called Mother?
It's called Mother in that it's about the planet, the world we live in, and it's a sci-fi story, so the perspective of the planet itself is a rather important one. You know, when you zoom out to an astro level, then saving the world and seeing our world as it is rather important. But the core reason, and I don't have this quote in front of me right now, so I'm going to paraphrase, is there's a John Lennon song called Mother with the lyrics, "Mother, you had me, but I didn't have you." And Shigesato Itoi said that he wanted to name the game Mother because he loved the heartache of John Lennon singing about the mom he never knew. The way he screams the word mother, he thought that word in isolation was extremely powerful, and that's what he wanted to evoke with the title of his game.
Wow.
And that's the kind of depth that this series is about. That's the kind of cultural references and passion that are baked into even the most unassuming aspects of it.
There's so much more than just what is presented on the surface level of this game.
Like any good piece of art, learning more about it and discovering where it came from is also part of the art. And that's why we're doing this show. I'm Kat.
I'm Jess.
And that's all she wrote. Nerdy Show, Mother, She Wrote, and everything that we make is made possible thanks to the generous support of our producers, Amber Devereaux, Austin Brown, Becky Scott Fairley, Bob Hogan, CB, Danielle McDonald, Joe Tank Rasierdeli, Josh King, Max Hansen, Mjolnir MK86, Patrick Webster, Sean Hutchinson, Sean T. Red, and our executive producers, Big Bad Shadow Man, Marcus Larson, and Jamieson Lalone. You can join the team on Patreon or supporting cast. Just head to patreon.com/omniversemedia or omni.supportingcast.fm. And if you think Nerdy Show's the bee's knees, well, hey, why not rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, you know, for old time's sake. And keep it subscribed, because you never know when we're going to show up or what we're going to do. This series is recorded and produced in Orlando, Florida, and Louisville, Kentucky, on lands stolen from their indigenous people, the Timucuan Seminole, the Shawnee, Cherokee, Osage, Seneca Iroquois, Miami, Hopewell, and Adena. Acknowledgement of the first peoples of these lands and the lasting repercussions of colonization is just the beginning of the restorative work that is necessary. Through awareness, we can prompt allyship, action, and ultimately, decolonization. For links to aid Indigenous efforts and to learn more about the First Nations of the land where you live, visit omniverse.media/landback. This episode was written and produced by me, Kat Blackard, and Mother, She Wrote was written and produced by me and Jessica Mudd, who also wrote and produced the original score. This episode features additional voices by Doug Banks and Charlie Hondrick. Special thanks to Kinesu for his invaluable work translating the Mother Encyclopedia. You can find a link to his translation. Other media we've referenced and all the Mother, She Wrote episode transcripts are available at mothershewrote.earth. Mother, She Wrote, or Nerdy Show, is not affiliated with Nintendo, Shigesato Itoi, or any rights holders of the Mother and Earthbound intellectual properties. Please, do yourself a solid and play the game's official Nintendo releases. Mwah!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.